from coast to coast across America, it's the U.S. Property Podcast with the latest real estate news, interviews, and market trends.
Hey, welcome back to the U.S. Property Podcast as we focus on the very latest in real estate property news from around the country with trends, forecasts, and predictions available, of course, on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon. Well, it's been another busy month here at the home of US Property, and today we are going to reflect back on some of the talking points with four of our guests over the last 30 days, including Greg in San Diego talking about his property market. We also spoke a little bit about cars from our childhood. And Sarah in Chicago, she is back to pick up on some real estate news from Illinois. Kevin was here, wasn't he? He was talking about the LA property market with insights. And what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Well, that isn't quite true because Kirby is here and he is reflecting back on the Las Vegas property market with us today. So that is what is all on the way in just a moment. And a reminder, if you've got a question or suggestion, you can email us to uspropertypodcast@gmail.com. And thank you, Cindy in Dallas, for letting us know that you are a listener, along with Cameron and Janet in Miami, and also Paige in Maine. Nice to have you with us.
While we can't predict the future of the real estate market, we can provide you with insights on what's currently trending. It's powerful information at your fingertips.
Now, as a San Diego coastal resident of the local beach communities there, you've had your hand in real estate, just for our listeners, 18 years of servicing the local industry.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I actually often say it goes back even further than that, because I bought my first home at the ripe age of 19 and learned a lot during the process. But yeah, as far as a professional, it's been since about 2005.
Wow. Well, we've got that in common, because I bought my first old 1930s villa at the same age of 19, actually had to sell back in the day, which was a Mazda RX-4 coupe. And all of the boys, the friends, said, "Are you crazy? What do you mean you're going to sell the Mazda to buy a home?"
I love it. I was moving from the Dallas area in Texas to Austin. My grandmother had passed away, and you know, she didn't have much money, but she left me a little bit, like $5,000. And my mom said, "You're going to buy a house." And I didn't want to. I was a punk kid, and I said, "No, I don't want to buy a home, Mom." And I tell you what, Mom insisted on it. And I ended up renting out the rooms to friends at market rent, actually a little bit below. And because of that, I managed to live for free. It was one of the best investments I've ever made, period.
So it just goes to show, if you're younger and you're listening to the podcast this morning and your mother has said you've got to get into property, make sure you always listen to Mum when it comes to property.
That's right. That's right. I mean, on top of the ability to live pretty much financially independent from paying rent at that point, you know, it grew my credit. We grew equity. We moved that on and sold it and moved it on to a better property. And, you know, another little interesting tidbit about this is when I went to sell, I actually did what, you know, we refer to in the U.S. as for sale by owner. And, you know, nowadays, you know, of course, being an agent, we always want to try to help those homeowners out selling their home. And I tell you what, I learned a lot of lessons during that process. Ultimately, could have caused me a lot of legal pain just because I didn't know better. So that's the lesson that I feel should also be learned in this discussion as well. So
yeah, that's a good lesson. Now, San Diego, obviously very, very popular with its favorable climate, beaches, also diverse job opportunities. But just in terms of the landscape, you are somebody that likes to get out, do a bit of surfing. You like to do some backpacking, you said. It's really made for the outdoors, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And we, I mean, you know, here it is, it's 75 and sunny. I mean, that's like the typical day here, 75 and sunny. It's so often it's like this, it almost gets a little redundant, to be honest with you. And you enjoy it when you get a little weather or rain, as odd as that might seem to hear.
And tell us a little bit about the coat drive. What are you doing here?
The coat drive is an opportunity for us to give back to the local community. So we ask our past clients and all of our surrounding towns to participate. Clean out your coat closets, bring us any coats, gloves, hats, anything to keep the children warm this winter season. And those get donated to local schools for children, to women's shelters and homeless shelters nearby. It's a really great cause because with the temperatures here in Illinois, it's a very needed space that needs to get covered.
Now, you talked about the whole transient nature of the market. What's been happening, especially in your market? In other words, are you having people interstate moving there?
We have seen the opposite. We have had over the last 3 to 4 years, probably one of the largest exodus that we've seen in a very, very long time, which for us meant we had a healthy amount of listings that were coming on the market. And it was largely because people were able to work remote due to COVID. So they would choose to not be a part of our lovely winter season. And so we had a lot of people that moved further south. I would say now we've started in the past 6 to 9 months to see some of those families move back to our area. I think there's always the wonder of the what if we didn't have to deal with the winter season. And it's been nice to see a lot of our clients circle back to our area and saying they tried that, they explored the warm weather all year, and they really did miss the change in seasons.
You know, it's something that we've been talking about for a long time, probably over the last 12 months, just in terms of larger cities. And with that working from home factor, people wanted to get out of the CBDs and go into smaller areas, but they have started to come back. Surprise, surprise. They're missing the city life.
I think they're missing the city life. I also think people just miss human connection. I mean, these offices are vacated, no one's coming into work, and we're slowly but surely seeing some of these larger corporations require 2 days, maybe 3 days in the office. And I actually think it's a very welcomed return. Where 12 or 24 months ago, I think that employees were still soaking up the idea of working from home. But that hit a point of saturation where I think now people have really welcomed in the idea of being face to face with other workers again. And that's why I think we've seen more people start to filter back into the city, where 4 years ago, it was quite the opposite.
So the challenges right now is for our team is staffing. We are actually generating more opportunities than we have agents to fill it. So right now we're in a heavy recruiting mode to bring on new agents and train them to help the influx of buyer and seller opportunities that we're seeing.
Yeah, that's a real problem in terms of staffing. Recruitment in real estate, I think it's at an all-time high. And one of the many challenges, of course, and you're a principal and you can talk to this, is just how you bring somebody in and nurture them, because there are so many principals across the United States that get somebody in, they've basically got a firestorm from day one, and there's none of this nurturing happening to sort of ease them into the property market.
I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, the number one complaint I get from agents who do join the team is that their last team or the last brokerage wasn't, you know, showing them the kind of care and consideration they needed, especially for new agents. You know, they joined thinking they were going to get all of this support, and they're trying to do a lease, which is quite simple in nature. It's less complex than a sale or a listing, and yet they can't get anybody on the phone to help them complete the paperwork. It's really about providing training, support, and being there for the agents.
Now, tell us, Kevin, about the area that you particularly focus on, and you are concentrating on the West Side and South Bay property market.
Yeah, so if you're tuned in and not familiar with what the West Side of Los Angeles looks like or the South Bay, essentially the West Side is like the Santa Monica, Marina Del Rey, Venice area. Generally speaking, it's west of Beverly Hills, even though one of my offices is in Beverly Hills. Westwood, Brentwood, all these areas, Culver City. These areas might stand out to you, but that general area is known as the West Side of Los Angeles. Then the South Bay, it's actually where I was raised. I have another office in Manhattan Beach. So the South Bay is well known for Manhattan Beach, Palos Verdes, Hermosa Beach, Redondo Beach. A little less known are the Torrance, Hawthorne, and Gardena parts of the South Bay. But yeah, those are the areas.
Now, Los Angeles, it has such a large landmass when it comes to the real estate property market. For our listeners this morning, I want you to suggest a suburb that might be a little bit of a sleeper, which hasn't yet ignited as much as it could. Have you got a slice, a pocket of LA that you could tell our listeners about in terms of, hey, watch this space?
Yeah. So there are a few, actually. They've been quite sleeper in the last couple of years. San Pedro, they're redeveloping the waterfront. And so that area, once the redevelopment's done, is going to increase again. It's been a little sleepy in the last 12 months more so. But that development's under construction. The other pocket that they just put out that they're going to start doing rezoning is on the backside of El Segundo and on the west side of Hawthorne. They're about to do rezoning because they're putting in metro lines there. And I've sold a lot of properties near rezoned areas. And the property values jump 20 to 40% almost overnight.
Now, just having a look at the developers, because I think there's a little bit of this incentivizing developers. So what is happening in that space?
So in this space, what they're doing, there's a few different ways that they're doing this. So one, if you go all affordable housing, they're allowing you to build three times as many units as you would be able to build if you didn't. So for instance, selling a property in West Los Angeles, and by right, somebody could build 11 units. But the developer who's buying is building 38 affordable housing units. The other thing they're doing is they're waiving parking requirements. So they're allowing for this, and then you don't have to build a parking garage for all the units. And then the third part, which is really important, is they're not letting people contest it. So the neighbors can't push back on it. As long as you're following the rules on any upzoned property, the neighbors cannot essentially contest it and stop you from building.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, because you've been in the Las Vegas market. I think you started your career in 2010 there in Nevada. Tell us a little bit about how you started off, because, you talk 2010, even though it sort of kind of sounds recent, it's coming up 14 years ago.
So I was a banker with Citibank my previous career, and then a financial representative with New York Life for 6 years. And my main clientele was realtors that lasted through the crash that hit with the housing then. And so in 2010, I decided to get out of that. I got into real estate because they were the people still making money. And then was the REO scene. So 99% of the homes listed were, and we had a ton of inventory, were REOs from the crash. And so I went under a team lead with Prudential, then was my brokerage, that he was a REO listing agent. And so I would work sign calls back then. And that's kind of how my career started in real estate. So vastly different than it is today.
Yeah, so it probably was quite a good year to actually start in real estate after the GFC crash in 2010.
Average price point then was $129,000 for a house, about $40,000 for a condo, versus today's market where you're showing people homes and a lot of them are end buyers that they're going to be living in it. I was a lot of investors. 75% of the market was investors, and a lot of the homes were stripped. So it was cash only. It was homes that some we couldn't even walk into, a lot of squatter situations, cash for keys. And so a way different showing, offering escrow process dealing with banks then too in the REO world than it is today in with a end user and usually a seller who is an actual person versus a entity.
You know, I'm reminded just a few weeks ago, I rewatched that movie, The Big Short, which kind of explained what happened in the GFC. And there's this really interesting Las Vegas portion where they go in and they talk to some people that are property owners. And it really just highlighted just how bad things really were and probably unnecessarily might have given Las Vegas a bit of a bad rap.
Yeah, because it was just people who bought and then they were buying loans. They were getting loans that they didn't understand, and that's where it all crashed. But they were still just normal people or people that thought they were investing in real estate that shouldn't have been, that couldn't afford to keep those homes. I mean, you had bartenders owning six homes, but they're all interest-only loans, and they couldn't afford the arm once it went up.
Yeah.
And so they had to foreclose on them.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're listening to the podcast and you haven't seen that movie, I would highly recommend The Big Short because it does take you into the GFC and all the machinations and gives you a little bit of an insight into just how bad things were. But okay, let's sort of fast forward, Kirby, because that is such a long time ago when you started, 14 years ago. Boy, the market, I mean, you're talking about condos, 40,000. The market has really moved on since then.
Oh yeah, now we're $270,000 for a condo, $480,000 for a house.
What are some of the, perhaps give us three questions that are the most commonly asked questions. And, you know, they can be from the likes of, especially the Canadians, because I think the Canadians are slightly different, aren't they, as opposed to the Californians that might be coming to you. So maybe just sort of break all of that down for us this morning, Kirby.
Yeah, so California, you know, it's relocation based off of taxes of those cities and controls and states. Whereas Canada sees us as an investment opportunity and has for some time. We're still priced right, but then also we are a huge hub for the conferences. So a lot of the Canadian investors I've had, they will buy properties here. They usually target towards the strip of the high rises, but then once they see the high rise cost of HOA, they'll look for more off the strip homes, golf course community, stuff like that. And a lot of them that I've had purchase, they purchase for something to have when they're here during their conferences. We have short-term things like the Airbnb type properties, but then they will also purchase long-term and to have a sit and hold type real estate investment that could possibly home for them later as a second home.
From powerful and up-to-date news to professional real estate experts with the latest property trends, know your property with the U.S. Property Podcast.